We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Focus from Illinois Public Media. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. Our technical director is Jason Croft. In this hour, we'll look at the recently concluded spring session of the Illinois General Assembly. Among the bills it sent to the governor were measures on redistricting, school reform, and workers' comp. They passed a casino bill, but they haven't sent that one on to him just yet. They did send the governor a budget of some $33 billion in proposed spending for the fiscal year that begins tomorrow, July 1st, 2011. Governor Pat Quinn has signed into law the proposals on redistricting, workers' comp, and school reform. He's promised to make cuts to the budget plan, and he's expressed concern about that gambling bill he's yet to have arrive on his desk. Two guests are with us this morning to share their observations on what happened and didn't happen. They are Robert Rich and Ray Long. Bob Rich is the director of the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs. He's also a faculty member in political science, the College of Law, and the College of Medicine at Illinois. Ray Long is a State House reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Listeners, I invite you to join the discussion. Join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu, will-talk@illinois.edu. Ray Long is with us this morning by telephone. Hi, Ray.
Hi there.
And Professor Rich is with us in the studio here in Urbana. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
So overall, how would you describe this legislative session? Bob Rich?
I would say that the legislature discussed really important issues and had on the agenda the important issues you discussed. But I would say that in the end, they kicked down the road, the can, on some really important issues. One of them is pensions. And we have the largest unfunded pension liability of any state in the nation. And the pension issue really needs to be looked at, and the legislature shares a great deal of responsibility for why the pension issue is as bad as it is. And the second issue is they left alone the entire issue of our unpaid bills. We still have unpaid bills somewhere in the area of $6 to $8 billion, depending on how you look at it, including the University of Illinois still being owed for this fiscal year still over $300 million. Dollars of our almost of our $680 million appropriation. So I would say that we discussed major issues. They passed a workman's comp proposal, a school reform proposal, and they kicked the can down the road on other important issues.
Yeah. Ray, what's your sense of what happened?
Well, I think Bob's made some good points there. I think what the lawmakers viewed was this as a political year as much as anything, too. And they knew that they needed to get their act together, and at least the Democrats believed that they needed to get their act together and get a budget done before May 31st. It might not be pretty, but that they wanted to get one done by May 31st because that was the deadline. If they went over the deadline, they would have had to bring in Republicans, because you need a supermajority vote in both chambers, and neither chamber has a supermajority of Democrats. So when they get the budget done in the House, they threw it over to the Senate at that $33 billion level that was talked about just a few moments ago. And then the Senate really didn't have a good response, didn't really have its act together as well, and then ended up passing the House proposal and is now trying to increase the spending. The Senate wanted to spend about $1 billion more than the House, and Quinn wanted to spend about $2 billion more than the House. So there's obviously a lot of things that did not get the funding that the governor and the Senate Democrats wanted. But this is the closest thing that anybody has seen that could get the state out of the fiscal mess over several years. They can't continue to spend. To increase spending heavily was the theory of the House, both House Speaker Michael Madigan and House Minority Leader Tom Cross. Now, the Senate Republicans had a proposal that said the real way to get it done would be to have a budget that's $5 billion less than what Quinn wanted. But the whole dance that came in here at the end proved that Madigan and Cross had their act together much better than the Senate, and that's the House bill was the one that got done. So that was the one thing that they felt they had to get done. And then the second thing was reapportionment. They didn't want to send that whole issue into the June time frame, because then again Republicans would have a say. So for the first time since 1970, when they had a new constitution, there were total dominance of both chambers and the governorship with one party. So the Democrats had their way with how they wanted to redraw the lines, reapportion the lines in the districts. And in Illinois, it went all Democratic, of course, and there are many, many, there are multiple, a couple of dozen Republicans who have been drawn into the same district or a district with somebody that they'd have to run against, perhaps maybe a Democrat in a heavily Democratic drawn district. So those are the two things that the key lawmakers, the Democrats, believe that they needed to get. Now, of course, there were other things like workers' compensation that they did do. There are complaints that it didn't go far enough by the people who wanted to go farther. There are people who said, this has gone too far. And, of course, you never get the whole loaf that you want around here. So they were able to cut at least half or, 60% of a loaf or something like that and come up with a bill. So those are some of the bigger issues that they took on and accomplished. They have still the casino package that is on hold, basically. Both houses voted to pass it, but the Senate used a parliamentary move to hold it and not give it to the governor. I guess the theory is that from talking to Senator Cullerton's people, who he is the one who put this motion in place, the casino is now in limbo until maybe they can negotiate something that's more amenable to the governor. The same thing is going on, oddly enough, with this vast program proposal for a smart grid that ComEd and Ameren would do. They'd be able to increase rates up to maybe 2.5%, somewhere in that range, each year. But in return, they would be able to put into place what they believe would be a better system that would allow people to have more control on how much they spend on their power. For example, if you have a washer machine load of clothes, or two or three of them, you don't do it in the middle of the day when the heat index or the heat or the actual temperature maybe today gets up to 100, that's the time when you're going to be spending more money under the new smart grid system. Yeah. You'd wash it later at night when it doesn't cost you as much. Right now, you can do it any time, and it's going to cost you the same thing. So those are kind of the big issues that came down here. I'm sure I missed a couple more, and Bob will think of some more for me here, but that's what they wanted to do and get done. Of course, they wanted to get pension, as Bob mentioned, but that's one that they hope they can come up with some kind of new approach over the summer.
Celeste, let me just say a couple of things building on what Ray said. I think it would be a real mistake for any of us to believe that the legislature really tackled the budget issue. I think it's much more limited than that. I think they passed a budget this session which was more within the revenue estimates that were provided. But we still have a major structural deficit in Illinois.
Yeah, meaning, absolutely.
Meaning that we have many more expenditures than we have revenue. We still have the unpaid bills issue and haven't addressed that at all. And despite the fact that the legislature passed new taxes in January, unless we get spending under control and unless we deal with the unpaid bills, we're going to be back to having major, major problems with our budget. And the other observation I would make is that even though we are a democratically controlled state with a governor who's a Democrat and a governor who's president of the Senate and a governor who's speaker, it's like we had three different parties in Illinois. We have the governor's Democratic Party, we have President Cullerton's Democrats, and we have Speaker Madigan's Democrats, and they often don't agree with each other as much as Republicans and Democrats don't agree with each other in other states, and so we don't have a unified approach on how to deal with issues.
And I want to jump in here, and then we've got a caller who's waiting for us, so I want to get that caller into the conversation as well. But I think to sort of tease apart some of the things that the two of you have been saying in terms of revenue and spending and the budget and long-term debt, you know, we have this big question in front of us. Will economic growth provide revenue? Will spending be reduced enough so that that temporary tax hike can be rolled back come January 2015? Are we looking at further tax increases?
Well, I have grave doubts that we're going to roll it back. I think the temporary tax increase is likely to become, at least in part, permanent. And I would say that part of dealing with the unfunded liability issue in pensions is going to be to come up with some new revenue. Whether or not that is simply a matter of, for example, beginning to tax pension income in Illinois, which would raise quite a bit of money, by the way, if we did that, or that was adding a service tax in terms of sales tax. We need, frankly, to come up with other pension-related revenue, and there's lots of alternatives here in terms of doing that. But, of course, the legislature coming into the year 2012, which is an election year, is going to be very reluctant to, quote-unquote, raise any more taxes. But my opinion, the truth is that if I had to pick an issue, which was the issue for the state of Illinois, that the tie would be between the continued problems with our structural deficit on the one hand, and right below that would be the unfunded pension liability.
Yeah, Bob's made some good points there, and what he was talking about there with the whole issue of how there was a personal income tax increase pushed through by Democrats that went up 67%. We're now talking about that expiring in 4 years. It's hard to get a grip on how bad this state is in until you start thinking about what Bob was saying there, too, and that is that you have a major tax increase bringing in maybe $3 to $6 billion a year, $6 billion, $7 billion if they have a good year, and you still can't pay down that backlog of bills. Quinn has talked about putting together a major bond package, maybe $6-8 billion, to try to pay down old bills, and then his belief is that you'd pay less in interest on a loan than you'd pay out in interest to people that you owe money to. These are people like nursing homes and pharmacies and other folks who provide services to the state.
Universities.
Yeah. Well, and one of the big issues there is that you can't get enough agreement to do that. And Republicans, their one kind of club in this whole fight is that they need that the legislature, Democrats who believe in Quinn's plan, need Republican votes to pass this borrowing package. And Republicans are so far reluctant to do that, they're saying that we got to hold spending down, and bringing more money into the system will only encourage more spending. There's not enough discipline here. Mm-hmm. And the House has the most discipline that they could get passed, most disciplined budget they could get passed, but it still is questionable whether Illinois would be able to right the ship when those 4 years go back, when they roll back.
Yeah, and what's unprecedented, Celeste, also in the last number of years is that Speaker Madigan and Leader Cross have actually worked together. Unprecedented. And the other thing I'd mention that we haven't mentioned yet that I wouldn't want to go unsaid is that the single largest spender on the budget is Medicaid. And even though we had some Medicaid reform in January, again, we've just touched the surface there.
Right.
And like other states, Medicaid is the 800-pound gorilla of state spending. And by the way, state spending that we don't control fully because it is a federal state program and it's an entitlement.
Yeah.
And that issue also is causing our debt to go up and up and up.
Let's take a call. This is a listener waiting for us in Coles County, line 4. Good morning.
Yes. I thought I would just mention that I've followed the legislature, the General Assembly, for about 60 years. And I don't think I've ever even heard of a General Assembly that's made as many very major changes, almost radical changes, revolutionary actions and changes as this one has in the last 8 months or so, the last year, or let's say the last 8 months. I don't necessarily agree with everything they did, but just briefly, you had pension reform. It didn't go far enough, but it was significant pension reform. You had the civil unions. You had the end of the death penalty. You had the radical reform of workman's comp, even though it maybe didn't go far enough. You had a major tax increase, which maybe went too far, but you had a major tax increase, a very radical action. You had educational reform, which is enormously significant, making it easier to fire teachers, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, first and foremost, you had massive cuts in spending. Now, as they have said, maybe the spending cuts aren't great enough, aren't as great as they should be, but they have been great enough to raise the ire of both the governor and many, many people throughout the state who will be affected. So I'm just wondering, I think there's never been a more productive legislature in the history of Illinois as the one in the last eight months. I don't necessarily agree with everything they've done, but I'd just like to know if they have, if they've ever heard of a legislature in the history of Illinois that has done as much revolutionary big changes and actions in just an eight-month period as this one has.
Well, if you go back 8 months, I think that's a good point. We're focused on the spring session here, which started after they had the end of the last session. And the last session, the three things that were major and, landscape shifting at the end of the last session were civil unions, the tax hike, and the death penalty ban. Those were big shifts. There's no doubt about it. The landscape did shift in Illinois. I think why that happened at this point is that in many cases that's a reaction to Blagojevich's resistance to a tax increase while he was in Springfield. Now, that's a popular populist move that, or position that he took, but he also wanted more spending. And if you don't get your budget under control, you're going to end up with a big, big backlog of bills. That's one reason that it happened. Of course, the recession was something that hurt the state in ways that hadn't been seen in decades. You saw billions of dollars in decreases in money from sales tax and income tax revenues. So they were able to do that for a combination of reasons. They got through this election. The one thing they wanted to do, the Democrats wanted to do, was get through the election before they raised taxes. And then they raised taxes by using about a dozen lame duck votes to get it through the House alone. So, I mean, politically, it was a smart play the way they played it. There's been a lot of questions whether or not it was abuse of the lame duck system, but still, you gotta hand it to them in the way that they finally accomplished putting the votes together. Now, the civil union bill, that could have happened maybe under Blagojevich too, but that was one that just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and again, they waited until after the election to do it. And they were able to pull it together again with some lame duck votes. And the death penalty ban was one that I don't think that could have happened before the election either, but it was gaining momentum all along. And I'm relatively certain that Blagojevich would not have gone that far on a death penalty ban. He might have. I could be wrong on that. But he always had his eye toward public polling, and even though public polling has shifted on that issue, he did not want to reduce the belief that he was trying to engender that he was tough on crime. But you're absolutely right where there were a lot of things done. The education reform is a big one. That was one that we left out, too, and it's been on those kinds of issues, if you go back that far into the last year, the veto session and the lame duck session that happened in early January, those are major changes, and there's no doubt about it. Caller's absolutely right.
Caller, I agree. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's just talk just for a moment about this school reform issue linking student performance to teacher promotion and tenure. It passed 59-0 in the Senate and 112-1 in the House. How did that happen?
In my judgment, and by the way, we're going to get a very similar kind of bill that ultimately is passed that affects higher education as well, not just K-12 education. And I think that's a national trend. And the national trend is to want to tie performance to budgets and performance to resource allocation. That's one part of it. The other part of it, as the caller talked about, is the issue of making it easier to fire teachers as well. I think it happened because there is so much public demand for more accountability and more accountability for our educational system, real concern about performance of students and how whether or not we're competitive with Japan, Korea, and with Europe. I think it's a whole other question, Celeste, whether or not performance-related budgeting is a good idea, mm-hmm. And whether or not it makes sense. But the political answer to your question is I think it's A, accountability, and be real concern on part of the public of the United States losing its competitive edge and not doing as good a job in education. And so I think we're looking at other reforms in the future too, including perhaps year-round education, longer school days, higher demands in terms of outcomes.
So politically, this was a no-brainer, and we've got an election coming up. And
correct.
That's what the public correct. Wanted, and they gave it to them. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Western Indiana, line one. Hi.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Yes, great. I'm interested in the casino bill, and I'm wondering, is the governor against this, or why is it on hold? When is it going to come out of conference? Where are we on our casinos? We've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and talk about a source of revenue if it's done right. I mean, that would really help, wouldn't it?
I think that and Ray will have something to say about this as well. I think the governor has real moral questions with respect to gambling and using gambling issues. The president of the Cook County Board has moral questions about this as well. The short answer to your question is that we're waiting on this because the bill has not even been sent to the governor yet for action. Ultimately, I think what will happen is I think the governor will approve fewer casinos than was envisioned by the legislature.
The caller's question is right on the mark. Where is the governor on this? What is his position? And we're waiting for that, actually. He has said that he believed that this bill was too heavy, too expansive, and he didn't want to turn the land of Lincoln into the land of Las Vegas. But he also is listening. And the parliamentary move that put the bill on hold, you usually try to get the house of origin, if you will, the house where the bill is. It usually takes only 30 days. They're supposed to get it to the governor within 30 days. He has 60 days to review it then and make a decision. Well, they passed it, but then they put it on hold by having a technically, it's called a motion to reconsider. But what Cullerton is saying, and what he said down here a couple of weeks ago, that he wants to see whether the governor could find some middle ground or find some way or some path to get the bill passed. Now, Cullerton was even talking about the possibility that there may be a way it could be altered, that the governor would still sign it, but some of the people who voted for it wouldn't like it, and they'd have to amend it and pick up votes from somebody else who would like it better. It's a very difficult puzzle to get it to the point where everybody is, and the governor is probably looking for some way to save face. Will he cut down the number of casinos that are in this bill, which are, what is it, five? Rockford, one in Lake County, one in the south suburbs of Chicago, Danville, of course, and Chicago. And they also allow for slot machines at racetracks. They allow for all sorts of new positions at the current boats. So there are different ways to shave it back. You could shave back the number of positions. They even allow slot machines at Midway and O'Hare airports. And so the governor could look somewhere. He could say, well, maybe not the airports. He could say fewer positions. He could cut out casino here or there, like Bob said. But ultimately, you have to get it through the two chambers of the General Assembly. And this was the equation after many, many years of trying that finally worked to get it built up to the point where they could get a casino in Chicago, which is what is considered a gold mine destination, if they can get it done and open there.
And Governor and Speaker and Mayor Emanuel also supports this as well.
Yeah, and I find it interesting that we have a caller in Western Indiana who it seems to me he's sounding like he'd like to come to Illinois.
Well, and that's one of the theories too. I mean, the theory is that you'll be able to draw people if you get people from Danville or driving past Danville to go over to Indiana to go to casinos there. Then that is money that could have been spent in Illinois. Now, on the flip side, there are people from Indiana who probably would like to have that Illinois business keep coming, too. So it's a variety of reasons, and there are a variety of there's almost as many opinions in the General Assembly as there are lawmakers, and there's 177. So it's a very difficult equation to put it together, and finally they got it passed.
If you've just joined us, we're talking about the recently concluded spring session of the Illinois General Assembly with Ray Long, State House reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and Bob Rich of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Bob Rich in the studio with me this morning, Ray Long with us by telephone. Listeners, you can join us with a telephone call this morning, 333-9455. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Our email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. More after a short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, Fareed Zakaria, host of the CNN program GPS and editor-at-large for Time magazine. He's revised and expanded his book, The Post-American World. He says it's not about the decline of America, but rather about the rise of everyone else. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
And this is Focus on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Back to our conversation about the spring session of the Illinois General Assembly with Bob Rich and Ray Long. I want to talk about the public pension benefits. There was what some call the historic pension bill proposed. And I do believe it was Cullerton and Cross.
No. Well, yeah, actually it was Madigan and Cross.
Madigan and Cross,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so we got halfway there. But okay. basically what it was is Cross was House Minority Leader Tom Cross is trying to drive the idea that you could have from X point forward, whenever they decide that point will be, that current employees would have three ways to choose to continue their pension. One would be to go forward with the current plan that they're in and pay more. Another would be to pay no more and go into a plan that would be called kind of the Tier 2 plan, which is one they put up in place for new employees, a lower set of benefits for new employees that were hired beginning this year. And the third would be basically to choose kind of a 401k-style plan, and that would be one that they would have more control over themselves. Now, good or bad, I don't know, but the big problem here, and Bob talked about it earlier, is that we've got the biggest pension debt of any state in America, and that's somewhere around $80 billion. Some days it might be worse. It all depends on where the stock market goes. But this is an approach that they want to tackle. Now, the Senate Democrats, including John Cullerton, have said they don't believe that the Illinois Constitution allows for a change of benefits.
The so-called non-impairment clause of the of the Constitution.
Yeah, right. And it doesn't allow for a change or diminishment of benefits that current employees could get. So there you have it. Cullerton did say, though, that he would allow a bill if the House could get it through. He would allow a bill to be called in the Senate, even though he believes that it's unconstitutional.
Let me say a couple of things to add to what Reyes said. This pension debate actually started over a year ago, and in April of the last session of the legislature, within a 24-hour period. Now, think about that, 24-hour period, Speaker Madigan passed a pension reform bill, which was a radical change. And the radical change was only for new employees. And the new employees would have a pension which was significantly less comprehensive than previous pensions. First of all, it was for people only who retired at the age of 65. There were some who would say 67, and that the and that employees would only contribute 6% as opposed to the current 8%, and the employers or the state would contribute 6% and only up to $106,000 of income. And so that was a radical change. Then we got to this session of the legislature. And this session of the legislature, the Speaker Madigan and Leader Cross, and by the way, the Commercial Club of the Civic Federation of Chicago, which is the largest businesses and industrial interests in Illinois, led a movement to change the pension, modify the pension system even more than what Ray outlined, and provided those three options. Now, with respect to retaining your current benefits, I think it would be fair to say that the plan that was proposed basically said to folks, we want to encourage you, strongly encourage you not to do that, because the employee contributions would just about double and could go up to somewhere, instead of 8%, somewhere between 13 and 24%, depending on which public pension system it is. Then the new employees, as the April previous year system, and then the so-called self-managed plan as well. As will not surprise you, Celeste, this caused unions and others to go ballistic. And in part because the 1970 Constitution has this non-impairment clause. It's specifically the history, the legislative history behind that Constitution specifically looked at modifying pensions. And I think that a fair interpretation of that Constitution is that the Supreme Court would find unconstitutional attempts to change the contract with new employees. Now, sorry, with current employees.
Yeah.
Now, one last thing to say is that it is also, from a legal standpoint, also feasible to say, hey, contracts are only can be enforced when they're enforceable, and if we don't have the money to pay for the contract, you can't enforce that contract. So there is, to be fair, a real legal debate as to whether you can change pensions for current employees.
And also, it is my understanding, while the Constitution has something to say about the particular benefit of current employees, the Constitution doesn't say anything, as far as I know, about taxing pensions, correct? And the health care benefit.
Correct.
And cost of living.
Correct.
Well, those are all good points.
So right now there is a so-called COLA, which is if you're if you're retired, you get a 3% automatic increase in your pension benefits each year. That's not constitutionally guaranteed. As you say, the health care benefits aren't constitutionally guaranteed. As well, and you can tax it. By the way, you can also raise retirement age as well as to when benefits can be
given. Safe to say this will all be back on the table.
October 25th is the veto session, and you can be certain that the pension bill will again be on the table.
Let's take a couple of more calls. We'll go next to a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello. I'd like to talk about Medicaid, and I feel like that there's been some misrepresentation of the Medicaid program, because whenever people talk about it, they talk about total state spending on Medicaid and about how bad it is, but most of the money for Medicaid doesn't even come from the state general revenue fund. It comes from about two-thirds of the money comes from the federal government and from local sources, like the hospital bed tax, and also through local governments paying for Medicaid for, like, people in general relief. So that that like a couple of fiscal years, total spending for Medicaid was $13.5 billion. But of that amount, only $4.5 billion was actually state money. And so it's not really as big of a fiscal problem as it's sometimes portrayed. I kind of feel like there's a failure to make this distinction, that to recognize that Medicaid is a matching funds program, unlike some of the other programs that it's compared with, like pensions and education spending. So I was just wondering
ask Bob Rich to jump in on that.
It is a matching fund program, but it is a matching fund program between the federal and state levels of government, and it varies by state as to how much the state match is supposed to be. And even with the points that the caller mentioned, the demand on state revenues is still extraordinarily high, and it is the single largest demand on state general revenues that's out there. I don't think that's an incorrect characterization.
I think that the state spends far more on state employee pensions and health care and also education spending from the general revenue.
Used to be the case, not anymore.
Oh, well, anyways, based on what I've seen a couple of years ago from the Pew Research Center, they have like a Medicaid fact sheet, which shows you, it breaks all the spending down, like for Medicaid. And so, anyways, I thought I'd raise that point. So, thank you.
You're welcome. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign County on line 2. Hello.
I'd like to revisit the gambling issue. It sounds as though the reporting focuses on the revenue benefit to the state government. But if you look at the cost or the transfer of wealth in gambling to corporate interests outside of the state, and if you look at the social detriment of gambling that was prominent when gambling was first talked about in the state. How does this balance out currently?
Well, I think there's no doubt that a lot of people have had trouble dealing with gambling addictions over the years, and there's even a list where you can sign up to self-exclude yourself from going into gambling casinos. There are a lot of folks who think that this is a grave issue that will destroy lives throughout the state and will make gambling more available for many more people, and as a result, many more people will be hurt. There is a provision in this bill to add money to help prevent or deal with gambling addictions. Is it enough? I don't know, and I'm trying to remember what the figure is. I was thinking it was somewhere around $10 million, but that's off the top of my head. I'd have to check that. But the reality is that there are people who end up, you know, draining a spouse's bank account, draining the couple's credit cards, and they end up in bad shape, and it's led to financial problems and divorce and things even worse than that. So these are some of the social ills that come with gambling. There's no doubt about that. These things have been reported, but the issues and the arguments that the politicians have focused on is that this is a way that they hope to make more money and to help turn some of their own financial woes around.
I'd like to go back to Medicaid. How do other states deal with this problem, and is it how does Illinois stack up in terms of where we are with this issue?
Illinois is Medicaid's a matching program, meaning it's a federal contribution, it's a state contribution. Federal contributions range between 50% and 75%, depending on the state, and state contributions are between 70. And 50 and 70% in state contributions are between 30 and 50%. And so it depends on the state. Wealthier states by the Medicaid formula pay more. So Illinois is a 50-50 state. Every percentage point of match is a very large amount of money. Our congressional delegation has worked very hard to increase the federal match in Illinois because it would relieve our demands a great deal. But the reality is in Illinois right now, it's still a 50-50 match. And there are the local contributions that the previous caller talked about. But there is, with the new Patient Affordability and Accountability Act, the what some people call Obama care, there's going to be an increased demand on Medicaid, because Medicaid eligibility is going to go up to 133% of the federal poverty level. And that's going to bring millions of more people into Medicaid. And that will affect our state a great deal as well.
And what's on the horizon for dealing with that?
I think that the what's on the horizon is there's going to be some changes in eligibility criteria, changes in number of services provided, changes in managed care, because managed care does save money as well. I mean, there's no doubt the state is actively looking at ways in which they can reduce Medicaid costs. But because of federal law, there are limits as to what can be changed.
We only have a couple of minutes left, and I want to raise the issue, one more issue here before we're out of time. Well, let's take a call first. This is a listener in Belgium, line 4. Good morning.
Good morning, and I'm afraid the question I'm going to ask would take more time than that, but I'll touch the third rail that nobody else wants to touch. If the state of Illinois would legalize marijuana, we would pay all of our bills and several more. I understand that there are moral problems with it, but already people risk jail. They send their money to drug dealers in other worlds and cause other problems. It's a failed system. We could solve a lot of problems by changing the way we look at that. Thank you very much.
Okay, and what's the outlook for that happening?
Well, they can't even pass a medical marijuana bill here in Illinois. The idea that Illinois would go to become a nation, a state where they would legalize marijuana, you know, that I'm sure that would be a cash cow, but I think the federal government would have a problem with that. In fact, I know that. I've talked to some of the top officials in DEA, and the administration right now has no signs of showing that they're going to legalize it. Kelly's got good points, but I don't think
it's not going to happen in Illinois.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, here's my question at the end of the day. We've seen so much in the newspapers and on television and on radio over the last, let's just say, week, just to round it out. We've seen the conviction of former Governor Blagojevich. In those stories, we read about former Governor Ryan. The Tribune reported that some friends and family members of the state treasurer's office got a heads up about a Bright Star promotion. The News Gazette reported that the state has vacuumed up taxpayer donations on the checkoff on state income tax returns. You know, this is good government, where is it? And how does this kind of thing complicate putting other issues, let's just say our fiscal house, in order? Does it?
Well, absolutely. The problem is when you see something like that in the treasurer's office, where people were told if they put in $250, they'd get a match from the treasurer. Well, they didn't. Then they didn't keep track of how many $250 ones they'd had, and when they'd hit the maximum, people kept sending in $250. And the thing that you raised, Celeste, is that people were able to inside trade, basically, with information with family and friends if they worked in the treasurer's office. Well, that kind of thing, as well as issues like Blagojevich, really raise everybody's cynical level of how they feel about government. And when you have politicians put into a bad light, then you have more trouble moving the masses to listen and do what's right, especially when it comes time for elections. Look, this is a state that, despite many, 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 many reports about scandal in the Blagojevich administration, still reelected him, and he won by 10 points over Judy Bar Topinka.
There's no doubt, Celeste, that public opinion of government in Illinois is extremely distrustful. And as a consequence of that, it makes it very hard for the public to get behind measures that will reform government and provide the modifications that we need to get. So I would say if we were advising politicians, I would say that you need to engender more public support and trust in government, and certainly some of the ethics reforms that other states have done would help in Illinois. Campaign contribution kinds of reform, for example, would help in Illinois. More of the accountability kinds of measures we talked about in part would help as well.
There, we've got to leave it. We're out of time. I want to thank the two of you very much for talking with us this morning. Bob Rich of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, thank you.
Thank you.
And Ray Long of the Chicago Tribune, good to talk with you.
Great to be here, Celeste. Thank you.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, now on Route 45 in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future. It's part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Information online at SubaruofChampaign.com or 352-4700.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana. You'll find us online at will.illinois.edu. It's coming up on noon Central Time, 83 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Let's turn our attention now to the markets. Let's take a look at commodity prices. In Kansas City, July wheat, $6.91, down 54. September, $7.11 and a quarter, down 52 and three quarters. July wheat, Chicago, $5.85, down 56 and a quarter. September, $6.14 and a quarter, down 60. July corn, $6.20, down 78. September, $6.48, down 30. December, $6.20 and a half, down 30. March, $6.32 and three quarters, down 30. July soybeans, $13.11 and three quarters. That's down 22 and a half. August, $13.05 and a quarter, down 22 and a quarter. September, $13.02 and a quarter, down 21 and a quarter. November, $13.02 and a quarter, down 20 and three quarters cent. July soybean meal, $3.35.50, down $2.40. July soybean oil, $55.05, down 78. June live cattle, $112.50, up 77 and a half. August, $110.57 and a half, down $1. August feeder cattle, $138.42 and a half, up 65. July lean hogs, 94.15. That's down 107 and a half. On to the outside markets next. August crude, 94.42, down 35. We'll take a look next at the U.S. dollar. It stands at 74.32, off 38. The CRB index, 336.04, down 276. The Dow is up 129 at 12,390. The S&P 500 up 11 points at 1319. The NASDAQ up 31 at 2772. 1 minute before noon, this is WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana, online at will.illinois.edu. Let's take a look at the forecast for East Central Illinois. Today, sunny and warmer, the high 88, the wind out of the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, hot and humid, mostly sunny, the high 92. With heat index readings from 98 to 103. We'll take a closer look at the weather coming up in the noon hour of the Afternoon Magazine, which gets underway now as it is noon.